Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at Peace Health. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
Don't miss a beat. Peace Health can help you keep up on the latest for your heart with expert advice, advanced procedures, and comprehensive care. We have more than 50 expert cardiologists and 9 heart clinic locations throughout the Northwest to serve you. Let us put together a personalized heart care plan for you so you can enjoy all of life's incredible moments. Because focusing on your heart means you'll never miss a beat. Learn more at peacehealth.org/hearthealth.
Peace Health, community leader and proud sponsor of the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
Joining me on the March edition of Doc Talk is Rachel Stoppler. She is a physician assistant with Peace Health. Works in the emergency department. How are you doing today?
I'm great, George. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And since you're fairly new to the area, well, at least, you know, north of the bridge anyway, let's talk a little bit about your background. Now, you're from down the Coos Bay, North Bend area, correct?
That is correct.
So I imagine you grew up there, hometown?
Hometown girl.
Born there too.
Born in Coquille, and then went to North Bend High School and spent all my years hometown girl. I was raised out in Lakeside where it's boat access only.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So when you were in high school, or maybe it was before that, did you know what direction you wanted to take as far as your career path goes?
I would say absolutely. My grandfather was in laboratory medicine 63 years. And worked for a physician. And so at a young age, I began scrubbing glassware and assisting in the lab in dictation and typing. And we still had typewriters, you know, without erase tape way back in the day. And when physicians would sit in their office and smoke pipes and cigars, reading radiology imaging and pathology. And I grew up in medicine. And so that was what I was embedded and embraced in from the time I was a young woman.
So I imagine being a lab person would be really cool.
That's fascinating. Laboratory medicine is its own discipline, and it's so interesting. It's so different now compared to what it used to be. We'd pipette by mouth and sharpen needles and autoclave things. And, of course, with the advent of technology and safe practice, we don't do those things anymore.
Yeah. Oh, and we don't smoke pipes in the laboratory either anymore.
No, they do not.
So after graduation from North Bend, where did you head on to school?
Went into Oregon State University. Triple majored and minored at Oregon State with the primary goal of veterinary medicine. And even with a sufficiently high GPA, veterinary school is extremely competitive and was not accepted to veterinary school. So
good for us.
You know? Indeed.
I know my sister's a vet, and she went to Kansas State for her that. And it was hard for her to get in, but for somehow my father had a relationship with Senator Bob Dole.
And was able to
get him to pull strings and get her in there. So that was
very
cool.
Good.
So you went to Oregon State. Now that's pre-med, right?
Correct.
Now, med school same or different?
No, completely different. Took a long hiatus, worked a myriad of different jobs, kind of building a foundation as I grew. I've done everything from sell cars to copiers to work in corporate world. I worked for Johnson & Johnson for a number of years in sales and then circled back around. And I didn't go to PA school kind of traditionally. I was in my 30s when I decided to go into PA school. I did a post-baccalaureate degree at Southern Oregon University. And at that point, kind of decided med school versus PA school and had a young infant at the time and felt that PA school would be a better bet. My husband was military. We were being moved a lot. So I went to Pennsylvania, to Lock Haven University in Pennsylvania, and obtained my master's and my physician assistant degree there.
Wow. That is a long trip around the world, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, it's fabulous. You're embedded in the Amish country. Like it's just such a different place. It's just a wonderful experience in Pennsylvania.
Does that make a difference on how you view medicine?
Very much so.
Does it? How does it differ?
So I would say Pennsylvania, it looks so similar to Oregon in so many ways, but yet it's so different. You'd be driving along and all of a sudden the power lines will cease and you see buggies and wagons and this Amish culture. You know, it's just so different in how they care for their own and they from a distance watching this completely different culture, yet so close, yet so far away. Pennsylvania gave me great opportunity. There are so many physician assistant programs on the East Coast, but yet I had more opportunity where I went to school than I would have here in Oregon, just because of the rotations the school had set me on. I got to do emergency medicine, OBGYN, gastroenterology. I got to do a hospice residency at the end of school. I got to first assist for every surgery within the Geisinger system. So the opportunity was absolutely fabulous in Pennsylvania. Oregon, we have so many folks that want to come to Oregon. We have three physician assistant programs now in Oregon, and they're so, the student population is so high, you can't get the rotations and the experience that you need. They're fighting for space. I didn't have to worry about that when I went to PA.
When you were in Pennsylvania, did you work? Were the Amish part of the patient base?
No, absolutely not. The Mennonites are. You will see some of the Mennonite, especially in pediatric. They always warned us in pediatrics that if you ever see a buggy pull into the parking lot, you can expect to get a crash cart out, because those babies are typically pretty sick. So you do see some overlap with the Mennonite community. I did have a wonderful experience in an emergency room where an Amish gentleman actually did come in, was brought in by somebody else injured, and was such a challenge to treat. Their views are so different than ours of Western traditional medicine culture, and incredible opportunities.
So you finished in Pennsylvania, then did you rush right back home?
I did. I actually signed a contract a fourth of the way through school to come back to Oregon. My husband was going to be deployed again, and I had a little guy. And so being close to family was important. And I love Pennsylvania, but I missed home. There's nothing like the Oregon coast.
Was the contract with Peace Health? Or
no.
No, okay.
No, it was in Coos Bay.
So you started there down in the Coos Bay Hospital down there?
Yeah. So I started in internal medicine. Okay. I was thinking really family medicine, and then I started in internal medicine and began on a journey I had never imagined in the world of the opioid crisis and creating guidelines, and worked for a physician I had known for 16 years, for 2 years at a practice, and had some family changes, and shifted from Coos Bay down to Medford, working on contract during the opioid crisis, creating guidelines and best practice, and all the things we know today for opioid management. That was my opus for 10 years, was pain management, internal medicine. Came back to Coos Bay a couple of years later and practiced there for almost a decade and a half in internal medicine. Also worked at Barry Hospital as a hospitalist part of the time.
Wow.
So the traditional inpatient, outpatient practice, which is definitely shifting and changing in the world of medicine.
I'm speaking with Rachel Stoppler. She is a physician assistant at Peace Health, and we'll talk more on the March edition of Doc Talk.
Don't miss a beat. Peace Health can help you keep up on the latest for your heart with expert advice, advanced procedures, and comprehensive care. We have more than 50 expert cardiologists and 9 heart clinic locations throughout the Northwest to serve you. Let us put together a personalized heart care plan for you so you can enjoy all of life's incredible moments. Because focusing on your heart means you'll never miss a beat. Learn more at peacehealth.org/hearthealth.
Peace Health, community leader and proud sponsor of the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
I'm speaking with Rachel Stoppler. She is a physician assistant at Peace Harbor, Peace Health Hospital, Peace Harbor Medical Center. And we're back now. We finished off, you were down in Coos Bay. Let's move up to Florence here. When did you come to Florence?
Yesterday was my 5-month anniversary.
Oh, cool. And you're working in the emergency room?
Yes, emergency medicine.
All right. How do you like that? I mean, that's a different world altogether.
I love emergency medicine. So my background being an internist, it's I look at internal medicine kind of like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. You're putting together heart disease and strokes and diabetes and respiratory disease, and you're putting this puzzle all together. And if you don't have that foundation, I think it's very difficult to be an emergency medicine provider. You can't treat the acute critical illnesses as well if you don't have a good foundation. I also am a locum tenens at an emergency room on the southern part of the Oregon coast. And so a couple of years ago, I started doing emergency medicine. I'm also a tactical medic. and I am the Oregon State Police occupational injury clinician, and I teach tactical medicine. I'm a federally certified instructor. And so when we take the internal medicine and the hospitalist and you take the pre-hospital care and you kind of merge it all together, it blends beautifully for emergency medicine here at Peace Harbor. It's a level 3 trauma. So
the unfortunate thing, though, is because as we talked about before we went on the air, it also made you vulnerable to many different, the evil head of COVID came around a lot for you.
It definitely did. Previously, when COVID first hit, I was outpatient inpatient medicine, and I never thought that we'd be shutting the doors to a 72-provider clinic. And the next morning we came in and there were 15 of us in the building, and telehealth began as we know it today. And the people in the hospital were incredibly sick. I've ended up with COVID. This was my 7th round last June, despite vaccines. And so when you're embedded in medicine, it's unfortunately kind of an occupational hazard.
But even so, a lot of people during that period decided to walk away from the field. What is your fortitude for it? I mean, obviously you stayed in it and you have a real passion for it, it sounds like. So what kept you energized for it?
I think the team. When COVID hit, we drew together in Coos County, and I think as many places did, and said, we're going to be a team. We're all going to help each other. We're going to get back to the spirit of medicine. In this country, medicine has begun to treat wallets and not people. And as we drew together as a group, 72 providers, and said, we are going to be a team. And those that couldn't practice doing elective surgeries fiscally helped them out. We shared the load. We were that team approach to medicine, that care-based approach. And that is really kind of what drove us through. Did a lot of nationwide interviews. And we were so blessed in Oregon that COVID was very latent to hit here compared to our East Coast families of medicine. And so I think we had the luxury of time to kind of develop best practice and learn before we were so horribly inundated with COVID. And so I don't think I've ever been part of a group that's so team-driven until COVID.
How has the practice of medicine changed post-COVID?
In so many ways. On the primary care side, telehealth is so acceptable. Previously, years prior, we couldn't telehealth. You couldn't bill for it. It was something you didn't really do. And there were folks on the front end of medicine trying to push telehealth, and there was a lot of insurance care, managed care pushback. COVID, in some ways, has changed medicine for the better, for the fact that a lot of patients who can't maybe leave their home or don't have that luxury, telehealth, as long as you're in the state of Oregon, I could telehealth with anybody that's in the state of Oregon, which is beneficial to many people who may not be able to leave their home. They may not be able to travel to Florence or travel to Portland. So telehealth has expanded our scope within medicine in a lot of ways. I think on the other side of that, though, is there's still a lot of fear and misconception and misunderstanding and personal opinion that kind of get in the way of clinical science and trying to continue to stay the course on best practice and what is good for one patient is not always good for another, and treating the person as an individual. And I think it's important to say, this is a patient with COVID. This is a person. This is a human being. And this is what they're experiencing, versus labeling somebody with just a diagnosis.
I think the lack of accurate information when it first came around really hurt a lot, kept a lot of people from trusting the medical field and the medical profession, you know, to get those shots, to wear a mask or to stay, you know, secluded if they were sick and stuff like that. And that probably added to that whole pandemic that we had.
It did. Yeah. I actually worked harder during COVID than I did prior to COVID. Because there were so few of us working in Coos County, we would come in about 8 o'clock. We would telehealth all day until 1 or 2 in the afternoon, up to 30 patients sometimes. And telecommunication has been a huge challenge for some folks, trying to figure out how to use these different apps and FaceTime. And we kind of giggled. We had one with a cat, you know, running up the back of the couch up one way, you know, and some of our elderly patients who aren't as equipped as our younger generation with technology and phones and computers. And then we come and work in the hospital or in COVID clinic all afternoon. And then you pull night hospitalist shift. The thing that we saw is so many people did stay home. They quarantined at home and they sheltered in place. The folks that were coming in the hospital were so horribly ill that it really was a challenge. And then you put staffing on top of that. It was just kind of a perfect storm for a lot of months.
Earlier, you mentioned the opioid crisis. It kind of got that name probably a couple decades too late. What are you seeing now? I know over the last couple of years, you know, we had Measure 110 kind of change things up. But with fentanyl and stuff like that came in there. What are you seeing in the hospitals today regarding that?
So hospital medicine is so different than outpatient medicine and emergency medicine. If you would ever read the book Dreamland by Sam Quinones, it really gives a good background of the opioid crisis, what happened at the epicenter in Ohio, and how that ripple effect in our country. I actually worked for Johnson & Johnson during the beginning of the ripple and actually sold analgesics. And watching that as it was taking place, being a part of it at ground zero. And as I went through medicine, we didn't teach any in school. They didn't teach anything about opioids in school. You know, you went through some basic pharmacology and pain is the fifth vital sign. There you go. That was the extent of that module. So as I came into practice as a new PA, I was seeing lots of high-dose opioid prescriptions and what we call co-prescribing with other medications that are very sedating, very dangerous to use together. And the physician that was there said, not my problem, take over it. And so I sought out training, very ill-equipped. And University of Washington, I ended up being their alpha resident, the only APP or physician assistant nurse practitioner to be accepted to the residency. I was their first residency student there. And working together with folks that we now know the names in this country, like Dr. Jane Ballantyne, Dr. David Taubin, Dr. Alex Kohana, the team at University of Washington, they looked at labor and industries in the state of Washington at deaths, overdose deaths as they were growing, and said that there has to be a best practice for what we're doing. And it was in the workman's comp population is where this study started, and what we call morphine equivalent dosing. And all these clinical guidelines that came to pass. And Washington did a fabulous job in the Pacific Northwest determining guidelines, what's going to be safe, what's best practice. And you can't lump everybody together, and cancer pain is separate. Like, really, do we have a good best practice? And Dr. Roger Chow at OHSU, myself, the team at University of Washington, and Dr. Jim Shames in Medford all got together and said, something has to change in the Pacific Northwest. We are losing, at the time, 91 people a day to prescription opioid overdose. At one point, it was 161 people every day in this country were dying, as of like 5 or 6 years ago, every day from prescription overdoses, not illicit substance overdose. And creating together with the Oregon Prescribers Group, what's called the OPG, OHSU, all these powers that be, we sat down and said, this is best practice. Let's implement this. And it took us almost a decade of training primary care providers. I worked for the state of Oregon on a contract and went through the whole state and helped other prescribers institute best practice over time. And that was a 10-year project. And now we know what is best practice of what's appropriate prescribing, how much, when, what should you prescribe, what's an appropriate diagnosis. Is this safe? Have you really taken a good look at this patient? Are you going to cause harm to this patient, or is this helpful? How long do we do this for? And what we now know, and every medical student and every PA student gets, is best practice prescribing. That was a 10 years of my work as a PA working in internal medicine, having gone through a residency at University of Washington and instituting those. And so when I came to Peace Health and did my boarding, they have a wonderful hour lecture by Dr. Robin Virgin about best practice. And I kind of smiled, because now all of the work that these teams of medical providers have put together are now instituted across the whole country and being taught. And when you get to see your life's work being taught by somebody else, it's just the most incredible, gratifying experience to know that every hour of every moment that you sunk into this is being used for the betterment of care.
Wow. We're speaking with Rachel Stopler. She is a physician assistant at Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. We'll be back with more on the March edition of Doc Talk.
Don't miss a beat. Peace Health can help you keep up on the latest for your heart with expert advice, advanced procedures, and comprehensive care. We have more than 50 expert cardiologists and 9 heart clinic locations throughout the Northwest to serve you. Let us put together a personalized heart care plan for you so you can enjoy all of life's incredible moments. Because focusing on your heart means you'll never miss a beat. Learn more at peacehealth.org/hearthealth.
Peace Health, community leader and proud sponsor of the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
I'm speaking with Rachel Stompler. She is a physician assistant at Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. And Rachel, it sounds to me like your life has been about educating yourself and others.
Very much so. 23 years worth.
And it sounds like something that you're really passionate about and love to do.
Very much so.
Now, because you're in emergency medicine here at the hospital, you don't really have a patient base. So it's not something that you do. You work when the need is there, when someone comes through the door and something's going on there. What are some of the most common things you see in the emergency room?
So nothing common about common in the emergency room. And I think that's one of the reasons I love emergency medicine.
In this older community?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. You never know what's going to walk through the door. And that's kind of the beauty. Right. The beauty of emergency medicine is it could be a very simple strep throat or an ear infection, or it could be a trauma coming off the dunes. It could be somebody bleeding. It can be fine one moment and not the next. And the organized chaos of emergency medicine is absolutely fabulous. You're taking all the pieces of your foundation and then you're taking care of an acute problem that all those things affect. It's orchestrating a beautiful score in the emergency room sometimes.
It seems like it'd be really hectic sometimes too, but right. is that part of the enjoyment of doing
it? It is. It's part of the challenge of emergency medicine, the welcome challenge of emergency medicine, and it takes its tolls over time. It's important to have good boundaries and self care, but it is kind of part of the enjoyment of practicing that discipline of medicine.
And I imagine there's a time there where you have to quickly change your thought process when something different comes in. You have to go from one emergency to another, and you have to be able to say, okay, put this one aside. It's time for this one now.
Absolutely. And you're not only triaging multiple patients at one time, you're triaging different conditions within a patient. And it is a moving parts of many parts all at the same time. It is truly an orchestra in the emergency room a lot of the time.
Now, obviously, if it's trauma and that, it's a pretty cut and dry thing that you're looking at, you know, a broken leg, a severed, you know, something. But obviously, a lot of times you don't have patient history when you're in an emergency room. So when you're dealing with other conditions that may be more heart attack, stroke, and stuff like that, is it more difficult to kind of know which direction to go if you don't have a complete patient history?
I think if you're an excellent clinician, you take a good history from the patient, if they're able to tell you, and a good physical exam. 80% of a good clinician will be history and physical, and you should be able to go off that. Back in the day, when I come from the days of paper charts, we didn't have electronic medical records, and it was on you, the clinician, to be able to obtain an excellent history and physical. In my education, you had to handwrite notes. You were timed. The practicals were all oral dissertation that way. And so the advent of electronic medical records has been very helpful, but I come from a different era of training where I'm not – is it great? Absolutely. Do I use it? Absolutely. But 80% of what I do is going to come directly from the patient if that's possible, if they're not intubated, you know, if they're able to talk to me.
Talk to me a little bit about the team that's put together over there at Peace Harbor. Obviously, you work with a lot of different folks in that environment. Tell me about how that all works together.
Oh, it's fabulous. Dr. Heather MacArthur is our emergency room director and the chief medical officer for the Peace Harbor campus. Dr. Willie Foster is one of the emergency room chairs. Dr. Matthew Danagelis, Dr. Carrie Shannon, and Dr. Mary Jo Lewinsky, just a fabulous team of physicians. And the beauty of this is you have physicians that have many years of experience. Some are dual boarded. You have others that are younger. And it's a beautiful blend of clinicians there. And they're all approachable. They're all helpful. They love to teach. We're always in growing medicine. Medicine is a very humbling profession. And it's a team approach. And I love that we work together as a team for the betterment of patient care. I could not be happier. It's the first time in 34 years of being on the block in medicine that I've seen such collaboration at a specialty level.
And I'm guessing the idea of old school doctoring doesn't really apply, because if you're not learning the most up-to-date, the most current information, then you're kind of falling behind.
Yep, and that's not advised by the medical board. That can get you in hot water and get you in trouble. You can lose your license. You have to stay up-to-date on what is evidence-based medicine, and no one person can do that on their own. And so journal reading and sharing that, or having discussions amongst colleagues about cases, those are things that happen on a multiple shift basis where we are.
How has holistic medicine impacted emergency medicine and medicine in general? Because I notice there's been kind of a shift over the last three decades to treating the whole person and the whole body, which wasn't really Western medicine back in the day.
I would agree. So I worked with a lot of naturopaths over my career, and I have a very healthy respect for Ayurvedic or holistic medicine. And I think a lot of our clinicians, we are not trained well in Western medicine in school, at least on the physician assistant side. And so I actually went and sought out education on my own. Many supplements and regimens of holistic medicine affect the standard-based pharmacological care and medications that we give patients. And if you don't understand those interactions, you could be very detrimental. You could hurt somebody. And I think understanding why naturopathic medicine is so important to patients. And I think medicine as a whole should always be treating the whole patient. We shouldn't just be treating symptoms and medicating symptoms. We should be treating the whole patient. We have to understand where the naturopaths come from so that we can work with the patient on things that they're taking and how that's going to affect what we do on the emergency side, because things can thin your blood. They can affect your blood pressure. They interact with medications that we give in the emergency room. And so having a good pharmacology understanding base and understanding the practice of Ayurvedic medicine will make you a better emergency medicine provider. Not that it may necessarily change what you do, but if you have an understanding of that, then one, you may have to sometimes adjust, but I think having a conversation with the patient. If you can't meet a patient where they are, you're not going to have buy-in, and you may not be able to achieve treatment goals with that patient if you don't respect where they're coming from.
Used to be a naturopath was kind of looked at as the voodoo doctor of the day, and I've had conversations with naturopaths over the years, and the ones that I really like are the ones that say, I can help you with this, but if it gets to this, you need to go see a regular doctor.
Absolutely.
And that's something that has kind of changed over the years as well, because it used to be, oh, you know, we can, you know, they used to think they could do it all. But then they realized through time that, you know, they work on what they can do, and what they can't do, they let someone else do it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true of any specialty in medicine. You know, well, I don't practice podiatry. I don't practice surgery.
Right.
Each of us bring a specialty to the table, and we're good at that. So, you know, ask the expert in their field.
So I'm guessing you're probably still living south of the bridge, or you're commuting?
I do. I commute every week that I'm up here. I'm up here for four days out of the week, typically. A beautiful drive. I could not be happier. It's blissful coming up. It's, of course, a beautiful day today. Mm-hmm. And the drive home, you get that time to kind of decompress.
Unwind.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for stopping in today. It's been a pleasure. I think from just what I've seen here, the hospital is very lucky to have you on board. So appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I'm very blessed to be here.
All right. Rachel Stoppler, everybody. She's a physician assistant with Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. And that's it for this edition of Doc Talk.
You have been listening to Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.